everyone. So this episode is about Palestine, cancel culture, Israel, and we also speak about anti-Semitism and also Islamophobia. So if that triggers anything for you, it's obviously a very difficult topic to speak about. So please give this one a miss if it will trigger anything for you. And otherwise, there are resources in the show notes.
There's a good chance that I'm going to start breaking shit, shave my head Britney Styles and go all like and spiral. But until then.
Love that. And welcome Antoinette Latou.
Media commentator and journalist Antoinette Latouf was hired as an ABC Radio Sydney presenter for 5 days last month.
When I went into this role, it's ABC local radio. And so you're like playing music. I was doing talkback with Maureen from Blacktown.
But her employment was terminated on day 3 after being accused of breaching social media policy.
Get called into an office of managers and essentially have to pack my bag and leave.
What was her crime? She had shared an Instagram post from Human Rights Watch that claimed
the Israeli government is using starvation of civilians as a weapon of war in Gaza.
So, was Latouf's repost really a sackable offence?
This has been linked to a WhatsApp group.
Yes.
I'm in the WhatsApp group. I think Lem is also in the WhatsApp group. Can I ask, is there any other situation that you've experienced as
ever,
a journalist
ever,
that's like this?
Never.
Today, this podcast is being recorded on Gadigal land. We pay our respects to the traditional custodians of this country and elders past, present. We extend our respect to any First Nations, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people joining us today.
It's a lot, isn't it?
There's a good chance that I'm going to start breaking shit, shave my head Britney Styles and go all like and spiral. But until then.
Love that. And welcome Antoinette Latou. We should actually start it with that. There's a good chance that I'm going to do Britney and break shit because, babe, it's understandable.
Yeah.
After what the fuck you have been through and are going through. I mean, like, Jesus fucking Christ. I feel like public scrutiny is difficult when, you know, you wear an outfit someone thinks is ugly, let alone when it's about human rights and your job and who you are as a person and your community. It's a whole other levels.
It is, but the good thing is nobody has criticised my outfits or called me ugly. So I think maybe that's why I haven't cried yet.
Yeah, I think that could be, well, I hate your top. I don't love it. It's beautiful. I actually compliment you. You got a beautiful skirt on. I was trying to do a bit, and people wouldn't have heard our conversation before. And then it's da 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 da. I said she looks beautiful, and da 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 da. So Antoinette Latouf, you are a journalist. You are host of the Antoinettes.
Yeah,
it's a new podcast.
It is
on The Briefing here at Listener, and you're the author of the book How to Lose Friends and Influence White People.
Yes.
Which your method right now. You've committed to the bit.
I am shedding some friends, but gaining a whole lot of others.
I can imagine.
So it, you know, balances out.
I guess if we count the ABC a friend, then you've lost your nearest and dearest.
Well, you know, I still love the ABC and I still have many a friend in that building. And an organisation is only as good as the people who lead it and if they are fearless, and I would argue at the moment, they are not. But as an institution, I will always advocate for the ABC.
Love the ABC.
Our democracy is better for it. It does some of the best journalism in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I plan to get back on air at the ABC.
Because this was going to be a question down the line, but I guess we'll just start with it. People are kind of saying, like, cancel the ABC, which I want to say a few things. Logistically, not possible. It is the national broadcaster.
Yeah.
So it isn't like it's a corporate. You know, I guess it is a corporation, but it's the national broadcaster, so we can't cancel them. But like you said, the actions of the ABC are from individuals or a structural issue that exists in the ABC. It's not about the whole. Also, everyone that's employed by the ABC, everyone that works in Triple J or the radio, like everything, all the different elements of the ABC.
Yeah,
are representative of this awful decision that was made?
Absolutely not. They are some of the best content creators in the world. Oh God, we've got Play School at the ABC. We've got everything from Play School to Triple J to Four Corners. I don't know who's saying cancel the ABC other than like the Australian and Sky News people who only come out after dark when like they put their, you know, when the sun set and so do Morals and Ethics and then Sky After Dark come out.
But can we give context as to what is going on? Because some people don't actually
know. No, I'm
going to
give context after this.
Yeah, okay.
Well, no, but a friend of mine actually got half cancelled for promoting the ABC by people on the left.
What do you mean? How?
People saying you shouldn't support the ABC because what happened with you?
Oh, yes. Look, to be fair, there are people vandalising ABC offices and protests out the, you know, outside. There's a whole lot of, you know, there's a lot of public interest and anger about what is happening. I don't think it's so much about me. It's more what my case may represent, and people are really frustrated because they want a public broadcaster that's fearless and independent. And I just feel like the more I talk, we may need to backtrack. Yeah, and okay. Yeah, we need to tell people what's going on.
I was imagining graffiti of just Antoinette is hot at the front of the ABC.
Oh, I would love that. But the truth is, it was like justice for Antoinette. And I could just see the vandal's hand getting tired as he's spraying Antoinette because it's 10 letters and it's just
so long.
Yeah, it's like wishing it was.
Okay, so Antoinette Tooth, for those of you who don't know, do you want to summarise?
So I am a broadcaster and do a bunch of stuff independently. I haven't worked in a straight newsroom for years, for about 3 years. And I did that deliberately because I write columns and I give opinions. I have all the journalistic training and I've done years and years in newsrooms. But I've essentially positioned myself as a presenter and a commentator. And when I went into this role, it's ABC local radio. And so you're like playing music. I was doing talkback with Maureen from Blacktown and she was just telling me what she does to keep cool in heat waves. And I'm like, you're doing all right, Maureen. She's like, yeah, the air conditioning's not working. So I get, I put my washers, my face washers in the freezer and then I put them around my neck. And I'm like, excellent tip, solved Maureen. You know, Maureen. And so this is the sort of conversation.
Maureen solving double warming.
So okay. We were just, you know, that's kind of the sort of the conversation. It was a week leading up to Christmas. So you play music. We're talking about Michael Bublé, Christmas pudding. Like it's super, super light. It is not newsy because it's not part of News and Current Affairs. I was having fun. I was learning from Maureen. Like it was awesome. But before that, in the various other capacities of work I do, I did an investigation with Crikey, which is the online publication. And you may have come across the awful video that went viral, which purported to show crowds of people on October 8th or 9th, like after the Hamas attack, where people were purportedly chanting "Gas the Jews," which is a horrifically anti-Semitic chant. And obviously brings on connotations of the Holocaust and could potentially be a hate crime as though it's inciting violence, which it would be. Something seemed off about the captions, about the audio, about the fact that there were Jewish protesters there too. And so I started investigating with a guy called Cameron Wilson, started asking questions. And because the organisation that put it out, the Australian Jewish Association, which don't actually represent despite their name, they're considered a fringe and often damaging organisation, they put out the most heinously racist and offensive stuff on their social media routinely, almost daily. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, there's something off about this video. And it went all over the world, people saying that, you know, they're here in Australia, they want to do this awful Holocaust-style thing to Jewish people, which is abhorrent. Mm-hmm. As we started to unpack and get closer to the fact that that audio was dodge, that it, you know, the fact that university experts found that it was looped, it was like duplicated and looped. So imagine just getting crowd shots and just adding audio, doubling it so it sounds louder and putting it audio on vision that it doesn't match.
Well, not to make it lighthearted, but hello, Frankenbiting reality TV. Like this is like the oldest trick in the book.
Right.
And when you, and people, your brains can't differentiate between like what is being said at the time. If it's a crowd of people, you actually can't, like unless you know or have the media training to understand what is reasonable to be happening, or the captain
just
knowing where
it comes
from.
You just believe it.
Just believe it because your brain just goes, well, you believe what you see.
Yes. And also,
unfortunately.
Yes. And also, it also buys into confirmation bias. People who feel legitimately concerned about their well-being, because we know anti-Semitism was rising even before October 7th.
Yes.
And in reasons not connected to Palestine and Gaza, but the rise of neo-Nazism and white supremacy. So people are already in the Jewish community justifiably terrified. Mm-hmm. And so if they see something that, I'm terrified, this makes me more terrified. And I know of people who I'm friends with from the Jewish community were like shaken with fear at the thought that hundreds of people want to do this heinous act. Anyway, so as we got closer to debunking the veracity of that video, that pissed off quite a few people. They're like, okay, how dare she? You know, that it was suggested that it was anti-Semitic for me to even fact check.
Right.
Like, I'm just...
And also because at the time, everyone that was pro-Palestine or even like neutral was having to answer to that video. At the time, everybody was. It was like, do you condemn Hamas? And then in Australia, it was, do you condemn what was said on the steps of the...
Absolutely.
And then, of course, everyone condemning that then gave it more validity on both sides.
And I've done that. I've condemned Hamas. I've condemned anti-Semitic chants. I've condemned hate crimes. I've condemned everything. Mm. I won't condemn doing journalism and I won't condemn doing fact-based journalism, but I have condemned everything else. I have condemned rape as a tool of war. I care about human rights. I care about fairness. I care about lives. Mm. But that got some hardcore supporters of Israel offside that I would dare question. I'm like, wouldn't you be happy that people aren't saying that? Wouldn't you be happy to know that there isn't that level of hate? Or do you need to believe there's that level of hate to make you feel better about the military you support?
What do you think that reaction is to not being happy that wasn't happening? Because
I can't understand it. As someone who I would like to think is driven by reason and fact and wanting to understand and get along with everybody, I don't understand the desire to believe that scores of people want you dead.
Do you think that it was maybe it personified or solidified something that Jewish people have been rightfully feeling, and they're like, see, we're not, maybe because I feel like anti-Semitism, Jewish people almost get gaslit in like, oh, you're not really discriminated against. Maybe it was like finally felt
maybe.
Some sense and of
validation.
Maybe that's what it was. That's
maybe. And some would argue, and there were some other offensive and anti-Semitic things said, which I also acknowledged in there. So some people had said F the Jews, which is horrific as well. There were from the police reports and also from the organisers, a small number of kind of teenagers who were asked to leave, and they did. There were some people who said, where's the Jews? That is what was, I mean, not cool either.
Yeah.
That is what was amplified, dubbed and looped and captioned gas. So imagine having, I don't know the number of people, but let's just say it's 5.
Yeah.
And let's say it's 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then duplicating from the university audit report, duplicating that audio because they could see with the sound waves, getting a shot of hundreds of people of the back of their heads and then whacking that audio on it, which suggests that scores of people, men, women, children of all stripes, are saying this really offensive thing.
Okay. So that was discredited.
Well, that was debunked.
Debunked, sorry.
Very recently.
Years ago,
Yes. So when that came out, I mean, it was a sense of validation in that my journalism, what I believe to be public interest journalism, was accurate.
Can I ask, is there any other situation that you've experienced as
ever,
a journalist
never,
that's like
never.
This? Where?
Never. There is nothing as, there is no subject matter that is harder to cover fairly and freely in Australia than Israel and Palestine. There is no, you even get better and more critical reporting out of Israel, out of like Haaretz, out of Israel of the Israeli government than you do here.
Why is that?
Oh, gosh. I don't purport to be, you know, an expert. I've lived in the Middle East for a while, but I'm, you know, hardly a Middle Eastern politics expert. From what I see and what I hear from my colleagues, it's because there is a lot of complaining and there is a lot of lobbying and there is a lot of pressure, and that has a silencing effect on journalists who don't want to end up like me, who are like, well, look what happened to her. I did a story that the New South Wales Police came out and verified was true and fact-based. Imagine if you got something wrong. Like I have had this much kind of hate and pressure and heat for doing public interest journalism that was accurate. Because then some people say to me, well, why did you even need to investigate that? And I'm like,
well, it's a pretty horrific thing. So you want to see, you also kind of want to find out if it is true, who is saying this?
And then they should be charged.
Yes.
And they should be.
So if it is, if that's horrific. And also at the time when people were saying that they were at the protest and they didn't hear that being said, I think that was also like the kind of first sign, wasn't it?
Right, and the fact that police all had body cam footage and none of them had. There were so many cameras. How come nobody called it? Like, nobody know? And how come? And if it was said, it's horrific. It is potentially a hate crime. It could potentially be seen to be inciting violence. We have laws that are against that. And in which case those people should be prosecuted, because there shouldn't be people going around saying awful, violent, inciting things like that. But yeah, so then it's gotten to this point now where even though it has been proven that it was accurate and that that organisation that put it out has a lot to answer for. But yeah, so to wind back, I think that is why people are really, they're really afraid to do basic level journalism, let alone investigative journalism, because there will be people who work very hard to try and discredit you and silence you.
Absolutely. So you started to investigate this, and then
I went
ABC,
on air.
And ABC were aware of this, obviously.
Of course, because
doing their due diligence, they would know that you
did that. And not only did I do that, the ABC's flagship radio current affairs program, PM, also did it. Like, they did a follow, which it means like we kind of did the story first, and then the next day they did it as well. They went to the same RMIT experts. They asked same questions. We were just asking questions. We didn't have the answers, but we just thought something doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. So it passed their editorial test in that it's public interest journalism, and their journalists gave them a very similar treatment to the one that I did with Crikey. So it was all over the news. It was hardly a secret. And my views on wanting journalists, like being really worried about the nearly 100 journalists who've been killed, they're my colleagues, like journalist colleagues in Gaza, saying, hey, like we should like stop killing children. Violence is not the answer. Those views were on my social media. It was not a secret that I was concerned about the humanitarian crisis, that I was concerned about journalism safety. And I had done this investigation. They hired me, knowing all of that, because it was very public.
And then you get on air and you go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday you go, see you tomorrow.
Yeah, my words were like, chat to you tomorrow, can't wait.
The dulcet, the chat to you tomorrow, can't wait. Can't wait, guys, can't
yeah,
wait.
Yeah. After that meeting, there was an all-station team meeting, and there were dozens of witnesses there who can attest to this, where some of the people in charge were like, you know, running through a whole bunch of, you know, boring office-y type stuff. And they were like, oh, and Antoinette, it's great to have you here. You're sounding great on air. The audience is, it's the words to the effect of, you know, the audience is really loving it. So I'm like, yeah, cool, nailing it, doing so well, Maureen. Me and Maureen.
Maureen's really changing the world. Well done getting that out
Thank
of
it. Yeah, like it was really hard-hitting stuff. Just, yeah. And one of them, as you would have seen with Media Watch, was like, is Ollie the first cat to be on the Sydney to Hobart.
Yes,
I was just like, yeah, well, the first cat that we know of. You're like, oh, there may have been others, guys. Like, and so then I go back to my desk and I'm working with my, you know, fabulous producers. We're lining up the rest of the week, you know, segments and, you know, just doing what we do. And it's getting progressively lighter as we get closer to Christmas, and deliberately so, because people's brains, like, it's just like, what the fuck's this year been? And oh my, I can't handle anything. And then I get called into an office of managers and essentially have to pack my bag and leave. And I do that about 5 minutes after that meeting finishes.
This has been linked to a WhatsApp group.
Yes, a couple of WhatsApp groups.
A couple of WhatsApp groups.
I'm popular,
groups.
Abby, like you. We feature in lots of WhatsApp
groups. Yeah, I'm in the WhatsApp group. I think Lem is also in the WhatsApp group.
Yeah, I'm in the WhatsApp group.
As being, can we say this, Lem?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, she's not actually Palestinian.
It's a fake one.
So guys, Lem's actually doing a bit where she's not gay, she's not a Palestinian, she didn't come here on a refugee visa. She's just it's just like a bit that she does for the show.
Yeah, it's cute, Lem. I like it. I like it on you. Yeah,
and the irony of the message about Lem was that sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but because it's so the irony of it. Maybe you can say and laugh then, because but it was that there was no paper trail that she's Palestinian.
Yep.
What? And we went, that's kind of
the point. Yeah.
That's the point. Is it then not acknowledged as Palestinians? Then would you like to speak on that?
Yeah. When Nan was, escaping bullets in 1948, she was like, where's the paperwork for my granddaughter? You know?
Sorry, I don't fucking laugh at that, but I'm going to. You can edit me out laughing.
No. I think it's funny because it really shows the lack of understanding of what displacement is, which is like when you're displaced, there is no paper trail. There's no papers, you know? So there's thousands and millions of Palestinians who don't even have an ID or a passport or anything.
Yeah.
That's just part of
displacement. Or the right of return,
yeah. And to be honest, I struggled in Australia for the first maybe 4 years to say that I'm Palestinian. So maybe that's why they couldn't find, like, it was like coming out a little bit, because I just kept getting weird responses when I said, oh, I'm also Palestinian.
What sort of responses?
Like just people shifting awkwardly. I was just trying to avoid discomfort for people. Like people were feeling uncomfortable when I said,
but that's,
I'm Palestinian.
There's a you know, quite a colourful history of anti-Arab sentiment in Australia. Oh, and even saying I'm, you know, Lebanese, people would shuffle with their, you know, and kind of look away. And they'd be like, oh, but you're one of the good ones. And I'm like, you're one of the like fucking asshole ones, wherever you're from, buddy. Like,
you're one of the asshole ones is so good.
Like,
but also
I'm
Arabs,
one of the good ones.
Arabs are shit towards Palestinians too, right?
Yes.
Like where I studied in Lebanon, yeah. like I did get a lot of people being like, when I said I'm from Jordan, Jordan, Jordan or Palestine, Jordan? Like tell me where you're from so I can
judge you. How I can treat you.
And so that was what she was accused of
yes.
in the group chat. Oscar isn't actually bald. And I'm
a virgin.
Yeah, I'm a virgin. So that's why that's our team. We actually sat together in listener headquarters and we thought, what can we be to get a full range of diversity in this team? And we needed a bald cis gay man
yeah,
with ADHD.
Gay.
And then we got our we gave Palestinian refugee gay to Lem. Yeah, we did a little out of like a box. We were like, oh, what are we going to be? What are we going to be?
It was a very big process, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was a really big drama. But I'm glad we made it through. It sucks we got called out for it.
Yeah.
But this group chat.
Oh, yes, this one. So there were two.
Sorry,
one was called Lawyers for Israel. And the other one was called Jewish Academics and Creatives. The Lawyers for Israel was around 160 people, and the Jewish Creatives and Academics was much larger, 600, which is the one that's in the media a lot lately because there's been doxing or public release of names of everybody involved in that chat. But yeah, I have the transcripts to both chats and I sat there and I read all of the horrible things and some like just batshit crazy, like what in the alternate universe do you live in type of content in there.
Any examples? Because I've only seen the things pertaining to me because it gives me, I don't even know how to access these. Side note, can you send me a link or something? The full transcripts, but it gives me like, it makes me so angry them listing people and then actually going after their careers, especially you. It's like, I couldn't read the whole thing. So
yeah, look, to be fair, and I think some context is needed, particularly in the creatives one, you can see from the beginning of that transcript that people, and I have no beef with people wanting to join community groups or professional groups, whether it's based on your career or your ethnicity or your geography. There are all sorts of WhatsApp groups, you know, like country mums for, I don't know, for yoga or whatever it is, you know, like there are. And, you know, like joining a group based on the fact that you're creatives and academics, cool, do it. And you could tell from the beginning, some were there looking for solidarity, for community, you know, very, you know, absolutely distraught about what has happened to the largest murder of Jewish people since the Holocaust, 1300s, like a rightfully distressed. As it progressed, you could see that there were some key players whose objective was to attack, troll or cancel people because whose views they don't agree with. And then some could argue, well, you have the freedom to assemble. You can write as many letters as you want. You can. I mean, they could write as many letters because of this podcast to both of our employer here and complain about us. They can and they probably do.
It has happened. I got a legal letter.
Yeah, so they do, right?
Yeah.
And so it's, I think the bigger story for me is particularly with the ABC, which is meant to be independent, fearless, you know, taxpayer funded, it should not be swayed by people, angry people in a WhatsApp group.
Yes. Well, it also was concerning because you said before, you know, you have a right to protest and to write letters in about people's views. But what you posted and what we've spoken about on the podcast that we've gotten, yeah, letters from lawyers about and been asked to remove me from the network and all these things, it's not views, it's actually
facts.
Verified facts.
Oh, but there's a whole bunch of people. And what you say, what are some of the batshit crazy stuff? Like some of the things that it's like, you know, but, you know, the United Nations is anti-Semitic or, but, you know, we can't trust Human Rights Watch or these people, you know, it's just like some of the most reputable organisations in the world, these are people who are determined to not believe whatever fact you put in front of them.
Mm.
And it just was reminded me a little bit of the people during the COVID and vaccine debate. And no matter how educated or not they were, if people subscribe to a particular worldview, you could say the sky is blue and they would be adamant that it is rainbow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing you can say will change that.
No. And I guess with this, it comes with antisemitism, it comes from a place of trauma. So it's so deeply ingrained in this group of people. And like we've been saying, rightfully so, Jewish people are scared and they are discriminated against.
Yes.
Not rightfully so discriminated against, but they are.
No. Like
they're not crazy. They're not imagining this.
No. This is like.
But this reaction is.
There's deep-seated intergenerational trauma of which I can empathise and understand to a certain point. Like my mother was a refugee. She fled during the night as bullets were firing at her. She slept at the floors of schools wondering if the school was going to be bombed while she slept. So when we see images and we talk about what's happening in Gaza, it's really real for my mother. It feels like I can feel it in my bones and my blood. I can't even explain it, even though I was born here. She went through the rubble when a building was blown up in her village, pulling out arms and this and that, trying to find survivors. She remembers carrying two twins who were their bodies riddled with bullets and shrapnel, running them to the hospital. They were both dead. She didn't realise that, but she ran them, she carried them, and she ran them both to the hospital. Then she passed out from all the blood and that. And she's like, nobody was empathetic around me. They yelled at her and said, if you can't help, go home. We only need people who can help. And so when I see that, when I see injustice, when I see violence, when I see race-based or religious-based division, I feel it. I feel it. And I can only imagine how that is felt by the Jewish community.
Absolutely. I do think there's been a lot of conversations about anti-Semitism, and there hasn't been much of a conversation about Islamophobia, I think, to be honest.
Not as much. Even though the incidents from last time I checked, 13,000% increase in Islamophobia in Australia. So, yeah, I mean, both Islamophobia and anti-Semitism are soaring. It's not imagined. It's real. But I just think organisations that are pivotal in our democracy, like the ABC, they need to operate at their best when there is so much hate and fear. It's when we need to lean on our institutions, our democratic institutions, the most. Mm-hmm. And I think people are feeling really let down by the ABC.
Do you think that if you were a white man, anything would be different?
I absolutely think things would be different. And something that the white man I did the investigation with at Crikey, he hasn't copped nearly as much flack as I have. He still has his job, but I think that's in part because Crikey are a progressive outlet and they would pretty much say, like, fuck you to any letters or any intimidation. But yeah, he hasn't been attacked on social media like I have, and he hasn't been singled out in the way I have.
Can we link what happened with, like, how the WhatsApp group affected the leaving of the ABC?
Yeah. So what we know from some reporting from Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, who got their hands on this Lawyers for Israel in the first instance, was evidence of the organising of these letters of templates, like, say this about Antoinette. It was like, call to action, you know, write to these people. And it was the board, like Ida Buttrose, chair of the board, the managing director, the communications minister, say these sorts of things. And then there was evidence, according to the conversation, that they were getting responses from Ida Buttrose, who's the chair of the board.
Yes, I've seen these.
Yeah, so it would suggest that they're having interactions over the phone and on email with very powerful people who have confirmed that I have been emancipated, because the ABC is saying they didn't sack me. They're just saying they liberated me. They unchained me. I don't know what the word is. And then a further conversation is going, oh, you know, she's filing with the Fair Work Commission. How can we make sure the ABC doesn't settle? Like, even talking about how can they can leave, use their legal prowess and influence to try and, I mean, whether or not that's just a pipe dream and whether it can actually be realised, but, you know, discussing how they can ensure that they don't settle with me or they don't come to the table. And so reading all of that, I'm like, damn. Firstly, most of them spelt my name wrong. Like, you went to law school, get it right.
I mean, cancel culture is a whole thing that I want to speak to you about, because cancel culture actually, I think, doesn't exist when it comes to the way that the right describe it as, where they're like, these lefty snowflakes try and cancel everyone, because no one's ever been actually cancelled. People trying to be more progressive that I can think of, except people that have actually committed crimes, right?
Yeah.
Even Chris Brown is still headlining fucking tours, yeah, you know, after being a known
girlfriend basher,
violent man. R. Kelly is still, you know, fucking.
He's in jail. R. Kelly's in jail.
He's in jail, but people still play his music at the club.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn that off. What the fuck?
It's so funny, but I'm going to have to jump in here because you did mention that I'm part of, or we've just launched a new podcast called The Antoinettes, and our first episode is about R. Kelly and Chris Brown. Can you still love the art of a monster? And we have it out, like, what are the parameters? When do you stop playing their music? Like, is it like a bit of a bit of girlfriend bashing's okay, but kitty fiddling's not? Like, you know, like, how do you?
I did see your Instagram reel of this.
Yeah, like, what's the moral calculator of what we cancel or not? But that's another conversation.
But I think with cancel culture, I just am kind of like, oh, because it always is, it's like a right wing, almost like a dog whistle, where it's like cancel culture, like, they use it as like, oh, you can't say anything these days.
Yes, but those same people were applauding my sacking.
And this is what I was going to say. It actually only ever happens from the right trying to get people, and this is a very clear, active, they can say that it's for legal ramifications or that it, you know, that it's to protect themselves or whatever, but it actually is, that is the ultimate cancel culture, is getting someone, what are we saying? Freed from their job.
Emancipated.
Emancipated from their
liberated
employer.
Yeah.
Like that is actually that is the most extreme version of cancel culture that I've heard. And like we said, like we received, like even though we're laughing about it, like we received a letter for the podcast after having Bassem Youssef on. I was mentioned in the group chat a lot.
How dare you interview him?
I'm fairly certain I've lost a few jobs from it. There are a few jobs that like I was waiting to hear back just about money and dates and never heard from people again that week I posted the Bassem Youssef thing.
Yeah, right. So let's see what happens after this episode goes out.
Oh,
Abby,
who cares? I mean, look, I'm loaded.
No, I'm but like I've had to sit there and do kind of a bit of a balance the sheet. So I'm like, well, if I'm going to have to go through this very public and arduous legal proceeding, it's not fun. You know, I'm not going to recommend this journey on TripAdvisor. It's tough.
There have been big jobs that I even said I will do this for free. One of the jobs I wanted to do it so badly, and it was so keen. They approached me, and then we were waiting for it that I released a Bassem episode, and I just never heard again anything, and someone else was announced as the role.
Yeah,
and then you feel like you're crazy, going, "Oh, it's because of this," but I guess you have at least validation. But it's we got the letter here. And
but that has a chilling effect on people. It may, for some, make them reconsider, will I ever talk about this again?
A few people that I know are actors and they're in the industry and they're posting about it, and their agents are calling them going, stop fucking posting about this, you're not going to get any work. Yeah. Like when it was just first happening, people are getting trouble from their agents.
I feel like rightfully,
they aren't going to get... They may not.
Well, I just think it's gotten to a point now where even Albanese is coming out and he's like, hey guys, like we're really good friends, but like please stop killing so many people. P.S. I love you, but stop killing so many people. Like I feel now there are enough bodies in the mass graves to make it okay to talk about it a little bit. I don't know, Lem, if you've noticed, but there is even the language coming out of places, you know, like the ABC and other outlets, even from News Corp, a bit more, not damning, but just telling of what actually is happening. I feel like the temperature's changed a little bit.
Yeah, but it's like, I cannot imagine if 34,000 Israeli people died, would it be then that the media would act on it?
Absolutely like, not. And no, you know, nor should they. Like being outraged on October 7 and covering it comprehensively, fair.
It's fair.
Fair. But then continue it. You should not have to get to the 34,000 to go, okay, guys,
maybe
a little bit. Something's just don't go wrong. Too hard.
You but know? I have had influencers even behind the scenes come to me and say, hey, Lem, like really, I support like the Palestinian cause, but you know, I'm just not going to post about it.
Yeah.
Like I have had many people come to me and say that.
And that's just your individual choice. I understand people have bills to pay and for some teeth whitening deals might be really important.
well,
no judgment, but also a little bit of judgment.
When I first posted about Palestine, my managers got an email from a brand who promotes themselves as being very progressive, and they sent recommendations of guests on the podcast that I should have on that were hectic pro-Zionists and said that I should really rethink my stance. And they've like marketed themselves as very progressive, very left-wing, very inclusive. And then they're having the gall to email my managers going, if Abby could just do this. And I'm going, it also feels like a little medium like threat of like, we're not going to work with her unless she does this. It's like, I don't want to work with you, but I also have the benefit of being able to choose who I work with.
Yes. And
some people don't.
Yes. And I think it's important to point that out. And it is a privilege to be able to get to a point in your career where you pick and choose and you can say no. And you can, there are some influencers who say they've lost like 40% of their partnerships and deals because they talk about Palestine, you know, and at a cost of living crisis and with the crazy interest rates, I get that that hurts. I don't know, but I just put it back to, man, like, if your biggest grievance is, you know, how much money, how many cocktails you can buy on the weekend and you might have to pull back a bit when this absolutely, and if you are someone who is progressive and a feminist and you stand for all of those ideals, they absolutely have to extend to the women in Palestine who are burying their children or having C-sections without anesthetics, who can't breastfeed their children because they're malnourished. So they're giving them dates to suck on, hoping their children won't starve to death. Like if you really are a feminist and you're not saying anything, then you're not a fucking feminist.
No. And
you really aren't.
Yeah. And also, like you were saying, the reality of it is you will not lose all of your income. I know if that's like bitchy to say, but it's like really, I think we're like with influencers and influencer deals, like realistically, not there is growing support for Palestine. So speaking about it actually isn't going to take all your money away.
No, it'll take some away. And it might surprise you who, because some people, as you say, they stand for progressive values on everything but this one issue.
Yes.
It's like this, like asterisk, like we're for everyone, but not everyone, just like most people, but just not them.
Yeah.
I told Abby not to talk. Like, I was worried about Abby talking to Bassem Youssef and Nevaeh on these, you know, like I even was a bit worried from a producer's perspective. And it just goes to show you.
The like producer's always right.
No, I think it's just about like this culture of silence that we're in right now. The fear, exactly.
Yeah.
It's just not conducive. And it's you know, if the ABC is actually buckling under the pressure of a lobby group, like that is really concerning. And that's
a precedent. Well, also, when you said that, I've never, this is going to sound a bit unwell, but I've never had any repercussions for anything. Like anything I've said, but people have like, but I'm like, shut up, like fuck off.
No, but you might, there might be silent. It's that stuff that you can't put your finger on. There's like silent, there's the outright cancelling where people are on social media and you know, but then there's the silent things, the doors that close that you're not aware of, the backdoor conversations. Mm.
But see, this is the first time I've actually had tangible repercussions of anything I've ever said.
So
this is the only time.
But what did you say that was so?
I just had Bassem Youssef on. I didn't even really say much.
I think what was,
it was Bassem Youssef just being hot.
He is hot. He's fucking hot.
And smart and so compassionate smart and funny.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, I think what you were criticized, Abby, is that you did not want to platform a Zionist. That was the.
Oh, right.
Yes. Yeah. And I just said, I'm not going to do that. I don't see it. And I'm not well versed enough in this to like debate a Zionist. And my podcast isn't for debating. It's for getting people on that I agree with. So I'm too tired to do that.
Yeah, but also like there's a massive power imbalance here. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to platform the one with the fourth largest military in the world, billions of dollars in US aid. Even Australia sends military over, has for a long time the unconditional blessing of all Western democracies. Mm-hmm. They are hardly a besmirched minority that needs a voice. I could do it. I would do it because I could say, okay, I will ask you these questions and what about this and where does it stop and what's the right to self-defense versus human rights for Palestinians? Like you could actually contest the ideas.
Maybe we get Antoinette in my ear just to make me talk like one of those prank shows.
Just like, Abby, stop saying they're hot. Abby, stop.
Anyway, I guess the point of this is like when it comes to cancel culture, people can say, oh, I'm getting cancelled and it doesn't actually mean anything. But this is the first thing that I think has had tangible repercussions on a lot of people in this industry. And a huge contributing factor to that is these WhatsApp groups. And now we're talking about doxing.
Yes. So doxing, and it means different things to different people, but generally it is the public releasing of information that generally, and again, this is where the definition shifts, identifies a person, sometimes their home address, their workplace, sometimes their number, their phone number, their address, but the idea is to publicly humiliate them, allow people to identify them, either to identify their workplaces, to either contact them or to boycott their workplaces. And in the worst circumstances, if there is intent for doxing for harm, is to be like, this is where Abby lives, go after her, which is absolutely, you know, would be rightfully terrifying.
Yeah, which has happened.
Yeah. It's terrifying. And it has always happened, but obviously with social media, it happens in different ways. And throughout the course of this, I hate to use the word conflict because there is such asymmetrical power, but through this latest issue between Gaza and Israel, there have been doxing of social media accounts, doxing of healthcare professionals who are pro-Palestinians. And in the most recent case, which has made a lot of headlines, some pro-Palestinian academics, artists and activists published the names and the details and the workplaces of all 600 members of that Jewish creatives and academics, which, to be honest, I'm uncomfortable with. I wouldn't do it.
Yes.
I'm uncomfortable with it for a couple of reasons. Because there are a whole bunch of people who were there with good intentions, I reckon. They joined and they were like, I just want to talk to people who are in my industry who share my faith. Cool. Absolutely cool. And then you could see they dropped off engagement. They probably, like I do with some groups, archived the group and didn't even read it.
And when this is getting weird.
These people are weird.
Yeah.
And you can see some people trying to bring back, no, we have to lead with humanity. There are some people trying to. And then there are the batshit crazy ones. They want vengeance. They want careers. And you could see that. And so I think by listing everybody taints everybody in the same brush of some of those really active, sinister people. Yes. Also, the historical connotations of a Jewish list,
yes,
is problematic. So I personally would not have done that. I think it's important to note that pro-Palestinian healthcare workers are being doxxed just for saying, hey, let's preserve life. Their job is the preservation as a doctor or a healthcare worker, the preservation of life. When they get reported to APRA, the medical body, the APRA has to investigate. Sometimes they have to they suspend their practicing license while they investigate. So while we have a shortage of healthcare workers, some who are just being like, you know, don't kill people, unable to work.
I haven't heard this. What's been happening with healthcare workers?
So almost every week there are gatherings of nurses and doctors and midwives who, you know, because they say our first, I don't know what the word is, but essentially their first oath, let's just say that's the word, is the preservation of life. Mm. And we as healthcare professionals are appalled to see not only what is happening to civilian life, but the conditions in which medical practitioners, they're trying to operate, like amputate legs. Like there was one doctor who had to amputate his own son's leg without any anaesthetic or medication, saying that, you know, as medical professionals, this is abhorrent. It's all hospitals being bombed and targeted, ambulances being bombed, paramedics being sniped. And so showing various levels of concern or Palestinian solidarity has led to Instagram pages which out them where they work, there have been complaints to APRA, which is the medical body, complaining about them, and APRA has to investigate, which is clogging an otherwise, like a system which should actually be
for legitimate reports
of medical negligence, yes, or whatever it is, or people dying under the care of a doctor or being administered the wrong medication, legitimate medical concerns. Yeah, and so that's been happening for months, the doxing of pro-Palestinian medical professionals. So the doxing has been happening on both sides, and I would argue one has probably more public impact than others with our doctor shortage. Both I'm pretty uncomfortable with. And off the back of that, our Albanese has come, and off the back of the Jewish creatives and academics doxing, and like, we're going to strengthen doxing laws. But I'm always wary of laws that are knee-jerk and passed quickly, because we have laws at the moment that probably aren't being enforced as much as they should, or we have laws in other parts of criminal code. So it's like, do we need new laws, or do we just need to enforce the existing laws? Did everyone just need to calm down and take a breath, take a beat before we react in a knee-jerk kind of as a result of a moral panic and a tabloid media campaign, which has been run off the back of this doxing? Sorry, I know I felt like I was really like back to year three debating with my, and that is the end of my debate.
I loved that. That was was fucking rebuttal. And we have Albanese here. He comes in and your time starts now.
Congratulations on getting engaged, wow. Anthony Albanese. Oh, yeah. Very cute.
Fuck. Because I didn't know that it was email. I thought it was just the names of who was in the group.
From my understanding, I didn't actually look closely, but from my understanding, it wasn't addresses or phone numbers, but it was like Joe Blow, who works at, you know, this business.
And you contact them here.
Well, they work at this business, sometimes even a photo, and this is Joe Blow's headshot.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked up, isn't it? I'm so glad no one said that you were ugly.
Because yes.
Were they saying others were ugly?
Yes, they were commenting on other people's appearance. So I'm like,
oh, God, they said that I was ugly?
I'll check.
Possible. Lem's like, possible, possible.
Possible, possible.
And then after that, Abby will be like, they deserve to be doxxed. I mean, how dare they?
I mean, but honestly, I'm pro more doxing laws, because my address got fucking posted by realestate.com. Like, thank you, realestate.com.
What?
Yeah, both my places that I've bought have been posted by realestate.com with like floor plans included in the...
But that is so unsafe for you.
Yeah, yeah. And then when I remember it was during lockdown, like during COVID, and all the anti-vaxxers were like hating me. And it was like posted in a forum. And then I got all these DMs, my full address, including postcode, saying that you weren't at least expected I'll be in the bushes with a knife.
That's terrifying.
Oh.
I've had voice notes saying that I'm going to strangle you to death. I want to see you die. I want to see the light out of your eyes die. Like,
look, and some of the people that have been doxxed on both sides have said that they've received death threats. So it's terrifying.
But when you call the police, I remember I called the police, my local police up in Northern Rivers, and the reason why I hate the Northern Rivers. And I had a whole episode about how I hate the Northern Rivers.
Okay.
The local cops laughed. And I was like, I was crying, like, hey, I've just gotten like three death threats with my address in them. I'm really frightened. Like, what do I do if someone comes to my house? Like, is there, like, do I call the local police station if you guys are closer? What do I do? I live alone. I don't have security cameras yet. And they were laughing, going, well, why would someone want to hurt you? And I was like, oh, because I'm a public figure. And they go, okay, love. And I was like, no, I like.
It's like, I'm Constable Derek, didn't you watch The Bachelor?
Yeah. Then he said, well, Dal, I can't really do anything unless I hurt you. So I'm not really sure. That's and I so think fucked. This is where we need to, on the note of doxing laws, there needs to be some sort of way that the police can investigate even troll accounts or like.
Yeah. And look, and the thing is, there are those like using a carriage service to menace, harass and cause offence. That's already a crime. What we know about the way in which police have been very slow to respond to the internet. They're like, well, love, just get off Instagram.
Yeah. They said to me, just block the people. I said, but if I block them, you can't trace them.
Yeah, like, so that's not the response. So we have, the concern about the doxing laws is we have laws already and we just probably need to do a better job of ensuring that cops, when you come to the station, use laws that have been there already, rather than just create new ones and perhaps create sort of jurisdictional overlap and confusion. Did you like that? Jurisdictional overlap?
I loved that. That was so, my brain just went. when she's so smart and hot.
Yes. Me and Bassam. Yes, it's just like me and Bassam.
Yes. Oh my God. It's the same experience. I'm like deja vu. It's like so hot and so funny and so amazing.
I was just wondering, like, what was said in the WhatsApp group, like, for either of you? Because I haven't seen it. I was just.
I can read out Abby's ones saying. If you want.
Yeah.
Like, love it.
And was there anything that, like,
Is there anything about me being
hot? Why did they leave me out?
Yeah. Like, I'm just wondering, like, my Instagram.
Yeah, they tag me? Like,
let me see here. Is there anything that can be done about Abby Chatfield?
How do you solve a problem?
Yeah, there were so many. I can't remember exactly, but there were ones like, how do we get her off air?
Does anyone have any contacts at Austereo?
I just want to say as well, just a PSA, if anyone is listening to this in that group, just so you know, I own the IP and I own the feed of this podcast.
Yeah.
So I actually can't be fired from myself.
Yeah.
Just so you all know, because there was a claim about my journalistic integrity. I'm not a journalist. I sit in this random couch from RJ Living and I talk shit. I've never claimed to be a journalist. I have a degree in property economics. I'm just having actual journalists on again, like I said, as my mouthpiece for smart thing, but speaking eloquently. Like, so I actually can't be fired from anything unless it was a TV show. But even then, I'm a freelancer.
Some would say, why are you doing it? I'm like, well, I believe that I'm not doing it for me. And yes, you can call me a martyr and Mother Teresa. I think it looks cute on me.
No worries.
But I'm doing it because I fear for our public broadcaster. I fear about the state of journalism. If a lobby group, if there was a lobby group called like Lawyers for China, and they just started getting people sacked because they didn't like journalists critiquing the Chinese government. It's ludicrous. It's outrageous. It shouldn't happen. And so that's the only reason I'm going to stick it through for as long as it's going to take, because I think it's so much bigger than me and so much more important than me.
Were you hesitant to make that decision to actually sue the ABC?
No.
Okay. It just went
straight on.
Because the Australian had already had a front page article about me by the time I'd driven home. And I was like, okay, all right, it's happening. It's on. Everybody's watching and it's going to set a precedent for the level of public debate.
So what's the ideal outcome of this? Is it to get settlement? Is it to actually go through?
Yeah. So I've said this publicly before. So the outcome is to have an apology to get me back on air. And people are like, as if you'd want to go back on air, what would you do? I was like, I would switch the microphone on. I'd give Maureen a call. We would consider continue our conversation.
Yes.
And so, no, I want to go back on air because I think this sends like a really scary signal, a firing shot to other people to, you know, don't have opinions and don't step out of line, especially if you're a woman of colour. Don't be, you know, don't piss off people in WhatsApp groups. And so I need to just go back on air and do what I love doing, which
is. It's also crazy. So I was just thinking that about like other radio hosts and like the fact that Carl Sanderlands can
which is the race thing. Well, I think it's in part the race thing.
Yeah.
He can say whatever he wants and just gets more shows and a promotion.
Yes.
And more money.
And he can speak about, make monkeypox jokes. He can speak about the Paralympics. He can speak about race. He can speak,
he can be so offensive.
He can do anything he wants. And everyone goes, oh, cancel culture. Well, if cancel culture from the left really existed, he would have been
cancelled. And the point is, while on air, I did absolutely zero on Gaza and Israel. We did nothing on it. So he's on air with a microphone, same as Alan Jones, saying the most awful, offensive, problematic, disinformation, whatever, they don't.
There's no repercussions.
Can I ask, would you? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Would you be a host of, if Paul Barry left Media Watch, would you take his seat?
Hell yeah.
Plant the seed. Oh, my God. That's the dream. I think that needs to happen. So from here forward, we want an apology. We want
a compensation for reputational damage and stress and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're kind of like sometimes a little bit brushing it off, I have to say. But like the feeling of having like people on a group like kind of planning
to get
you out of a job, whether that's worked or not, because you've been emancipated apparently.
Yeah.
That's like, it would leave me paranoid, to be honest. Like, you must have had moments where you're like, what else is going to happen? No? Or you were just like,
Maybe because I know the playbook. I'm not surprised by us. You know, I wrote that book, How to Lose Friends and Influence White People. And so I know the playbook. I mean, I know it didn't zero in on this particular conflict or this subset of people, but I understand how tabloid media campaigns, you know, target women, how they're more likely to target women of colour. So I know it's unsurprising. I did feel uncomfortable sometimes. I feel uncomfortable in public when people are looking at me. I'm like, are they checking me out because they like what I'm wearing? Because I've got parsley in my teeth, or it's because they know who I am. And, you know, I've had people come up to me and they just like run up to me and some of them crying and I have to like comfort them. But all I need is somebody to run up to me and, you know, do something to me. And so being out in public's a bit uncomfortable. I try not to go out in public on my own. I mean, I know I brush it off and make jokes, but it's pretty full on, which is why, and I'm going to talk about the Antoinette's podcast here.
Go.
I have to do it because part of the thing about being on air was to have fun. I was having fun because we shouldn't always have to talk about social issues and heavy stuff. And like we have multi dimensions to our personalities, which include like loving to take the piss and have a laugh and whatever. So the Antoinette's podcast is me and an African-American poet also called Antoinette. She's Azur Antoinette. And we just pick a topic each week. We did, you know, can you love the art of a monster? We have a laugh. We are completely comfortable ripping into each other and disagreeing. We don't think people disagree enough. And so, you know, we say it's a shit show out there. You know, she's queer. She lives with a disability. You know, we live on the intersections, you know, intersectional identities. But we're like, screw like the cry party and the, you know, life is shit and tough and it can be. Why don't we just have a laugh, poke fun at it and poke fun at each other and see where we land. And so that's the Antoinette's.
Yeah, it looks amazing from the... I need to listen to it properly. I want to hear that one about R. Kelly and Chris Brown because that's like a thing... That's something I think about a lot.
Yes, because I love Chris Brown's music. And I'm a... I see what you just did with that. You're like, what?
No, but Run It's a banger. Well, I loved this conversation, Antoinette.
So did I.
You really are hot and funny and smart and have a really nice skirt on. Wow.
Thank you, Abby.
She's the fucking dream.
You know what, Abby? You are delightful. And, you know, you're one of those people who I was hoping when I was going to meet you, because I've obviously seen you on TV and socials, I was like, I hope she's uglier in person than. But you are not. And for that, I am forever disappointed.
Thank you so much. Same to you. You're way more beautiful in person. Fuck you. Okay, so this is to the Antoinette's.
The briefing.
This is the briefing. Get the book, How to Lose Friends and Influence White People.
Yes, and follow this case, and
all the links. And then the Media Watch, watch that Media Watch thing because it is very good for this conversation as well. Thank you so much, Antoinette.
Thanks, Abby.
Oh, wait, GoFundMe.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, we actually said that as well.
Yes.
And you've got to GoFundMe as well.
Yes,
for my legal fees.
Because, you know, this is potentially going to take a while and I've got some great lawyers and barristers and I am not rich. But I'm really heartened by the level of support from all sorts of people who are just chipping in, whether it's $20 or whatever, because they care about the ABC, they care about good journalism. So you can find that in the show notes as well.
Love it.
Listener Production.